Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers. This is Dump Truck DS. I am flying solo today. No RC, no JCR, no Andrew Yoder. Sorry, everybody. It's just me. And my special guest, Pulsar. Pulsar is a legendary Quake mapper. He has done speed maps over the years. He's done jams. He has done retro jams. He has worked on Arcane Dimensions. And he's also in the gaming industry. He's worked on mobile shooters and MMORPGs and all kinds of things in between. So very versatile and a super talented mapper. Happy to have Pulsar. And we're going to get right into the interview right now. Oh yeah, why am I whispering? I'm recording this at work.
I found Quake for the first time. It was at school. There was a little story. I didn't have my own PC at that time. I was going to my classmate to play games on his PC. And one day, my classmate came to school and they said that there's a new game. It's so scary. We were even afraid to get close to the monitor. And I asked him what game it is, and say it's called Quake. I didn't believe them that this game is so scary. So I went there to check it out. It wasn't that scary, but it was really cool. I bought my own PC. My parents bought my PC for me. A year later, I got into Quake 2 and the rest of the stuff that was that time. And I returned to Quake in early 2000 when I discovered Planet Quake Level of the Week site. I played almost all maps from that list, and they were really impressive. And that made me want to make my own maps for Quake, and that's how it started.
So Quake was definitely your first kind of first game that you made content for, is that right?
Not exactly. I made a few maps for Warcraft 2. They were really simple, and then I made a campaign for StarCraft, the first one. It was a campaign that was unfortunately lost due to AGD crash, but it was about, I think, 10 or so levels with a story and the stuff, and they were not classic strategy type maps. They were missions where you control a few units, and you don't have to build things. You have to go through maps, pressing buttons, opening doors, killing enemies, and all the rest. And it had a storyline about in the alternative history of StarCraft with Kerrigan and a new Marine hero called Iron Fist, I think.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty impressive. That it sounds like a huge project. I mean, I know Blizzard games usually have their editing stuff, but it sounds like you had to do scripting and all kinds of crazy stuff for that.
Yes, it was a challenge. The main challenge was that I opened the editor, the StarCraft editor, tried to do the things that I wanted to do, like all those like turrets that came out of walls when you entered the trigger and the rest. And I found out that it was... I can do it from scratch. I spent about a week digging tutorials and all the rest. And then I started actually to make all those maps. I still regret that they're missing today. I would love to play them at my current age. And
that's something that comes up often. People have lost old work. I just started backing up my drive on the cloud, you know, like Google backup or whatever. And it's just so funny how so many people have lost so much content. I mean, I have maps that I made, you know, for Doom 2 and things like that, that are way long, long, long gone. So every, all you whippersnappers out there, you beginner mappers should definitely back your stuff up and protect it. So it's a lesson that everyone should learn.
Yeah. I back up all the stuff these days for about more than 4 or 5 years now.
Good. Yeah, we won't lose any more Pulsar maps. That's good.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
There was another map that is lost. It wasn't finished. It was a map for Quake 4. I started to work. It wasn't that good, I can say, but it's really worth to at least to have it in my own collection to look at what progress I've made since then. It was another HDD crash on my laptop. I got most of the stuff recovered, but the file itself was recovered, but it was damaged.
Oh man, that sucks.
So I can't open that map in any editor and continue to make. It was a map that was using Lunaran's texture set for Quake 4 custom set. And also, returning to the question about content for other games before Quake, I made a few maps for Heroes of Might and Magic 2. They were a bit better than my Warcraft 2 maps, but they were also pretty simple. So they were multiplayer maps.
So what was a multiplayer like in that game?
Oh, multiplayer. It was... when I got my PC, it was in 97, there were not so many friends of mine that had a PC, and that time most of my mates came to me, and we were playing games that can be played in multiplayer in hot seat mode. Like, there were like 4 or 5 men playing at my PC Heroes 2 that day, and multiplayer, I mean, campaigns, it was balanced. Balanced is a very different word to say. It was planned to be balanced for any player spawns, not just for one player. Like this.
So I'm looking at your Quadicted, you know, credits here, and you're really prolific. You have a ton of work out there, and then there's this big giant gap from like 2005 to, let's see, 2011. So you took quite a break there. You did a lot of speed maps, it looks like, and then you kind of stopped for a while, and then you I see that you worked on Arcanum. Was that your kind of return to mapping, or were there some other projects before you worked on that?
No, Arcanum was actually the latest project that I worked before that gap. It just took a lot of time to be finished on Tronin's side. I started to work on a map for Arcanum, it's the second map, Clandestine Sodium, right after Minkelenan, and I sent it to Tronin, and then kind of got lost in real life issues. I moved into another city and got too much into having fun out of PC. And when Arcanum was released, I think I wasn't playing Quake that much. When you get out somewhere and don't follow what's happening on the Quake scene, you return and you see there are so many new releases. You can't play them all at once, and it's kind of confusing. You just leave it, and say, tomorrow I'll play, and it gets complicated to... You don't want to play one map or two maps. I want to play everything that has been released to date, and when you miss a lot of releases, it's getting hard to get back.
I've taken a little bit of break because the summer's been really busy, and there are so many maps that I have yet to play just from the last few weeks, honestly. Well, let's back up a little bit to what was your process early on? In other words, I guess the question is, did your process change over time? Did you kind of hit the ground running, or did you have a long learning process, or you know, what were your methods?
Well, I can say that my methods differ these days that much. The style, I think it evolves, but the whole methods are almost the same. Like, it's more of a hobby. I don't plan, I don't make usually paper designs or the rest. It's really important when you're making multiplayer map or some realistic stuff or anything that is gonna be published or the rest, if it's a serious business. For me, Quake maps are, I'm a relief from work and from the rest, and I spend my time just, I just open the editor, I have the basic idea of the layout, like where it's gonna end, where it's gonna be the keys, the major doors, and like from here you'll go left and then right, and then you return to this area. And it may happen, and it usually happens, that between point A and B that I planned in my mind, in the process appears one, two, or three more rooms, and things get more complex. And I like it, like Quake for this. Quake is not a realistic game, and you can do all the stuff connecting in unusual ways, and it's good. It's not Half-Life, for example, or you strictly must do realistic stuff like buildings and all the rest. It should look like they could exist in our world. In Quake, you are free to do anything. In this basic, Quake is really abstract. And I think of it as a feature. So I just open the editor and go on making room after room with just basic idea in mind.
Now, how do you learn? How do you know how to stop, though? How do you know when you're you know that you're finished?
In terms of layout, I always know when I'm finished because it's usually I have the end in mind. But in terms of polishing, I think as everybody says, it can go endless. It can be an endless process if you don't say stop.
One more trim, just right over there in the corner. I missed piece of trim there. I need to add that. And then one thing leads to another. So you do your layout first. I mean, are you one of those mappers who does all the geo and then plugs in the gameplay, or do you kind of do it as you go? What's your method there?
My method. Oh yeah, and at this point it's also the same as more than 10 years ago. I make the layout with key monsters. Like, if monster opens the door or triggers anything, it is placed. But the rest of monsters I place when the layout is finished. But some key monsters or key battles or something, some ambushes or like this, they can be, I place them during the process. Just like you enter area and you see, aha, ogre attacks from here and sees you, okay, this place is good, this spot is good.
Yeah, I've never understood mappers who just completely do all their geo and then put monsters in at the end. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It doesn't mean that it's not as good, but I'm impatient. Like, I want to, as I'm building the map, I want to play the map. So I tend to go from room to room and then do the encounter in that room and then move on to the next one. And I used to plan things out on paper, and the last couple of maps I did, I just did them freestyle like you were talking about. And I actually like that, you know. It's not a bad way to work.
I think Talking about the gap, at what time I got into game industry and all my creative resources, my strength were going to my work, and I just when I returned home, I couldn't have any need or any possibility to make anything creative more. But these days I can combine this just because of my methods that as at work. I just go home and do a completely different thing. It's a hobby, and I don't need to plan all the rest, and I don't have deadlines unless these are mem jams. And it's good. You just go. I just go and do freestyle stuff, and somehow it ends up usually in a good maps, I hope.
So Leptis Magna in Arcane Dimensions, I can't let you get away without talking about that map. So how did that project come about? It's such an epic, giant, large-scale map. It's very memorable. How did you get involved with Arcane Dimensions and Ionis there?
Okay. Once Arcane Dimensions came out, I played, as I think everybody did. I was really impressed, and I wanted to make a map for it, but I had some other project unfinished at the state, and I didn't want to make anything large. I just wanted to make a small to medium map as it is, so just for I think a few months or there, like that. Mm-hmm. And I think I posted on Twitter that I want to make a map for Arcane Dimensions, and Simon contacted me and said, if you want to make something not that large, you can collaborate with somebody. I thought it was an interesting opportunity, so I didn't have anyone in particular in mind, so I posted on Twitter, I want to make an Arcane Dimension map with somebody. Is anyone interested? And Ionis was the first one to answer, and he said, I want to make a map with you. And I said, okay, that's fine, let's make a map. The original idea was to make a map in a different style. I think it was planned to be IK White plus Hexen 2 team. And we started to make the reference piece, and it didn't come up with anything that we liked. I decided to go pure Hexen 2. I wanted to make a map in that texture set for, I think, since the very beginning of my Quake mapping career. Mm-hmm. I made a few speed maps using that set. It was really colorful for that time. And I don't think there are many maps that are made using this texture set. I started to make a pure Hexen map. The starting area was the first one. I just started planting, placing brushes, and it turned out really good looking, and we decided to stick with that. That's how it began. And since then, every day, we were sending the map back and forth to each other. Fortunately, we live on the opposite sides our planet, so our time zones are completely different. So I worked a day and sent Ionis the map late at night, and it was his morning, I think, and he worked at his day, so we worked almost non-stop.
You worked day and night on the map.
Yeah. <That's great. laughs> That was the beginning of a long process, and Ionis is crazy builder, so the reason why the map is so huge is he made the biggest section. My part of the map is the start area, and it's an interesting fact. If you look up at the start area, you can see different styles on the left one. On the left side is my part. On the right side is Ionis part on the upper level. And you can see they are slightly different. And my part was the start area. The next area was the silky door and the area to the left. And the rest was the crazy builder Rhinos. This was his work, and he just places brushes all the time and in a tremendous count. Even when we were finishing the map, and I said, hey, stop! We need to polish things and all the rest. It didn't stop him. While I was polishing the stuff, fixing miscellaneous textures, gameplay tweaks, and all the rest, and he was adding new areas like. His super secret area. I think not a lot of people know that there are two super secrets in this map. One from me and one from Ainas. Because his secret is more difficult to find.
As always, he makes really insidious secrets.
There's a major battle there, and it's cool, and it was made when we actually stopped to work. I saw that we stopped to work on the map, and after that area, I was still polishing the map, and he added, I think, three more secrets. I remember the one in the tower, right in front of the beginning of the map, and some others. while I was polishing the gameplay during the testing period. Well, that's the story of the small map turned out to be one of the huge ones.
Yeah, I kind of chuckled when you said, I just want to make a small map. I just want to... It was like, really? God. Yeah, the thing about that map is it's just jam-packed full of gameplay, too. It's not just the open vistas and giant areas. There's just so much gameplay. So many things are happening, one right after the other, as you move through it. You know, I've played Arcane Dimensions when it first came out, and then I've played the updates and things, but I don't go back and play it a lot. And so there's only certain maps that really stick out in my mind. And obviously that was one when it came out that really just kind of floored me. But I do, now that you talk about there's two super secrets, I need to play that again, because I don't think I even got, I probably barely got any of the secrets, let alone the super secrets. I know I didn't get the super secrets, but I guess I gotta go back and play it.
Well, you know, there are two doors that require custom keys. One that requires the blood rune key leads to my super secret, and the one that requires the serpent key is Ainas. But my door, the door to my secret, is open. It's not hidden. It's closed, right, but right. It's not hidden. Mm-hmm. And Ainas' door is hidden inside another secret. And the key is hidden far away from there, so it's much harder to find. You can find my super secret if you collect all the tomes. There are four tomes mm-hmm. in the map, and when you collect all the tomes, you can destroy the statues that don't allow you to get to button.
Okay.
That's the key. to that secret.
So you worked with Tronin because he's such a unique mapper. You know, I mean, it's his maps that you like, as soon as you see a screenshot, you know who made the map.
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah.
Tronin was, Tronin's maps impressed me a lot even before I started to make my own maps. So I can say his influence can be seen in my even older maps. I can say that his map Desert Dusk 2 is one of my favorite maps from back then and still, and it's still one of my favorite maps to date. So I always wanted to make a huge, very impressive map, and it ended up with Menkelenan at some point. So I wanted to work with Tronin, and when he was searching for people to collaborate on his new mod, I liked the idea. The initial idea was a mix of IQ Blue and Knave, but I wanted to make a Knave map. A pure Knave map, and he said it's fine. So I made my map. I can say that we collaborated a lot. Not like Leptis Magna. We were working separately on each own maps. We sent mails to each other. Yeah, it was an interesting experience, requesting some new features. I've done that for the first time, that I think. But I can say that we collaborated a lot. We just testing each other's maps and discussing stuff. Well, comparing to collaboration with Ionos, it was not as serious, as complicated. It was just me making a naive map with a new progs that were updated pretty often, like that.
Right.
But I'm really glad that I worked with Tronin, and I'm still looking for his new maps. They are usually impressive.
Oh yeah. they're worth the wait, right?
Yeah.
It usually takes a while to release things, but MFX was on the Quakecast, and I wasn't part of that interview, but I listened to it, and he kind of spilled the beans that there's all kinds of stuff coming down from more veteran mappers, and I guess that's definitely one to look forward to. But it sounds like there's a lot more going on behind the scenes, kind of secretive projects that people are working on. So
what I want to say about Tronin is, anytime I think that I make something impressive in terms of size, and I compile the map, I enter the area and say, oh, that's huge, that's impressive, this looks massive. And then I open Tronin's map and say, no.
Yeah,
it isn't. It isn't at all.
Yeah, it's kind of intimidating, the sense of scale. And scale in Quake is kind of tough to do. I mean, I've tried to make large open areas, and I don't know, it's not part of my strengths to make large, you know, massive areas, because then you have to detail the massive areas. So I kind of tend to stick to the kind of original Quake, you know, corridor shooter kind of aspect in my maps. But so when you sit down to make a map, I know we were talking about you kind of do freestyle and everything, but do you, and obviously you set on a theme. It sounds like that's definitely a key part of your process, is trying to make sure you get the theme down and what texture sets you're going to use in combination. But do you look at reference, like from movies or architecture books or game design art?
Well, yes, I do look, but not that often, because Quake is not realistic. It's abstract, as I said before, and I want to invent things, styles. It's a very hard process for me. At the beginning of each map, I already have in mind what texture set I will use, but I do not always see the style of the brushwork. And first weeks are usually just me trying to find what the style of the map can be, the forms, the shapes, and all this stuff. Like it was my Retrogen 4 map comes to mind, since it was a pain for me to make it, because in that map I passed through that progress of finding the style I think 7 times, because it had sections from every map in fourth episode, and I had to reinvent the modern style for each one, because they were different. And but in any way, that style must still fit in the general style of the whole map.
Now, you've been involved with speed map packs. You've been involved with Explore Jam, which is really unique. And obviously Arcane Dimensions, things like that. Do you have like a favorite, type of map, that you gravitate towards? Like or do you just kind of experiment? It seems like there's quite a variety of styles and gameplay styles that you've mapped for. Is there what captures your imagination when you start on those projects?
The thing that is great about map jams or other events like speed mapping or anything is that exactly that you can try yourself in a different style of visuals, of gameplay, and if I have a spare time and some gem comes out with the team that is interesting to me, I try it for myself just to make something different. I have my styles that I'm used to, and the gameplay I usually make for usual maps that are still my main point of interest. But gems, they are really great if for making something new for yourself in terms of style for a short period of time. You know, a common map is can be a very long process of making. But with gems, you can be sure that it's not that long, and you can try something new without investing a lot of time in it. Therefore, you can do different types of gameplay or different visual styles, and it's great. And what impresses me a lot is that when the gem comes out, you can see that the one team ends up with a bunch of such a different styles, while the main team is the same. Then it's great. And as for explore gems, I think in Mid Zeros, I was forcing a team for a speed mapping session as maps that don't have monsters, just have traps, and nobody entered that. They were not interested. So I made my own map. It's Project Monster Free. It was, I think, the same that has become Explore Gems lately. It was in Mid Zeros. This was not a speed map. It was made. I made, I think, for a week. It contained no monsters. And I was really impressed when Sock came with Explore Gems idea these days, and more people are attracted to this idea now, which was not popular back then.
Yeah, I think for it's hard for people to wrap their head around, well, you're going to make a Quake map without monsters, and it's just environmental, and so it either works for someone or it doesn't. And I haven't done an Explore Jam, but I'm hoping there's another one, you know, in the upcoming, you know, this year or next year, because that's definitely something I've wanted to do, because usually, you know, it's just easy to plop down monsters and just enjoy the gameplay, but yeah, you really have to think through puzzles and you know, just different paths and different critical paths for the player to go through that you don't have to bring in the monsters into consideration. You can make something really unique. So that's cool. And I've played your Explore Jams. Things are pretty cool. So, but I didn't know about Project Monster Free, so I definitely have to check that one out for sure.
It's a short map, 10 minutes.
Cool.
And the more interesting the idea of Explore Jams is, that Quake has a very limited tool set for making gameplay without monsters. And the more challenging, the more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, let's move on to Half-Life 2. You did a mod called Rabbit Hole. You want to talk about that? Because it seems like a pretty giant project. I mean, it was quite a while ago. Do you remember when did this come out, and how did you get involved doing Half-Life 2 mods?
I think it was 2014 or so. But the majority of the maps was made even earlier, I think in 2010, maybe a year before. I wanted to try something different, and I was playing a lot of Half-Life 2 mods. A lot of them were really impressive. And I come up with idea that I wanted to make that I wanted to combine Half-Life and Quake elements. I can say now that didn't work quite well, but it was an interesting experience. It was my first work on another shooter that is not Quake. I really liked the input-output system of Half-Life 4 scripting. It's great. It allows you to make really cool things, a lot more than Quake in terms of scripting. But the problem of Half-Life is that it, you are really limited to realism team if you don't add extra content like textures or coding new monsters. And I wanted to make a mod where a player starts on the surface that looks like a usual Half-Life map mod from the beginning. And then you go up, go down to the underground, deeper, deeper, and deeper. And the deeper you get, the more weird it gets. It starts up with the usual combat with Metro Cops combined and the rest. Then you go deeper. It's like zombie filled lab. And then you get more deeper to a third map, and it's more like surreal horror like stuff with sections of low gravity and rooms that rotate with you, things up that going upside down, some giant ground constructions. Well, the idea was good, but the problem was that I couldn't use most of enemies from Half-Life Bestiary there. I use zombies, all of their types, but zombies are just not fun in Half-Life to fight with. And if you want to make something unusual, you have to think first about what kind of combat and gameplay in general there will be. And in Half-Life, I can say that without custom monsters that fit the idea that I came with, I can't make a good type of gameplay, I can say.
Now, why couldn't you use a variety of monsters?
Because the rest of the monsters is they are realistic, they are humans. I wanted to create a feeling that that place is a place that no human has ever entered before. It is completely run by other things, and the rest of the enemies were just soldiers and more of that stuff.
Yeah, it's now that you say that, it makes a lot of sense. It is those combine soldiers a lot of the times, or maybe antlions and things like that. But the antlions are pretty limited too. So yeah, I understand.
And that's the best gameplay situations and that Half-Life is made for is to fight human enemies, mm-hmm. gunfire, all the rest. While zombies are just the filler, you can say. They cannot be the base. Mm-hmm. Of the gameplay. You should mix it with something with different kind of combat. But overall, so, I can say that the mod is it's original, and not everybody in Half-Life community enjoyed it. But there were a lot of people that liked the idea. They say it was cool, it was innovative, I think. Some like it, some don't. I don't care that much. I can say it was a really good experience for me while making it. Looking back, I can say I made a lot of design mistakes there, gameplay wise, mm-hmm. In guiding player and combat encounters and the rest. And that the whole idea of using zombies as a main. The main elements of combat and the rest. And say to me, it was an interesting experience to work on, and because the game had really different mechanics, and I didn't use all them well, and it's really useful to me as a level designer.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, like, I think every project is a learning experience, even if it doesn't turn out well, or you don't finish it, or it begins up being a scrap or something. But you always learn something, like, oh, I made it too big, or this isn't the layout I want, or this layout's boring, what have you. But so now you have transitioned, let's see, in 2012 to professional, you know, being a professional in the game industry. So is this something you always wanted to do, or is this something that kind of, because of your mapping and stuff, that kind of came, you know, kind of came up, or opportunities came up? How did you get into the professional realm?
I was always thinking that it would be cool to work in the game industry, but in the school I thought that it was almost impossible to me, because I was originally from Rostov-on-Don, it's south of Russia, while all game dev staff, all studios were in Moscow or St. Petersburg, and I thought that I can get in there. But at some point I came to the idea that I can try. So I started to send my CVs to different companies, and once I get hired, and I can say that the rabbit hole mode that wasn't finished that time, but it was I think the second beta. I added the link to it, and my future boss played it, and that's how I got my job, my first job in game dev.
Yeah, so Rabbit Hole wasn't a failure at all. It was a success. I mean, that's awesome. That's great. So now you worked on, it looks like you worked on MMO RPG, Massive Multiplayer Online RPG, and All Odds Online, I guess. I've never heard of that one. And then you worked on a mobile, and you're working on something else now. I mean, how are you? Well, let me ask you this. What's the game industry like in Russia? Because is it mostly mobile? Is it PC? I mean, is there a strong console kind of aspect to things? What's the industry like where you are?
Well, in Russia, the most part of industry in Russia is mobile stuff. Well, most of people that work here in industry, they don't even think that it's possible to make PC games or something like that in Russia. Fortunately, most of my time I worked on PC projects. There are not much of them. Like Alice Online was it was the biggest project to that time in Russia. It was made by a huge studio with like 200 people only in one office, and there were some great people that I work with back then. That was a great experience. I learned a lot from really cool professionals. Well, mobile stuff was when I came back to my home city. I wasn't looking for a job there, but somehow the job found me. I got an offer, and I say, why not? So I worked for a few years on mobile game, and I can say it wasn't a casual game, so it was a shooter. It was really popular shooter, and it was pretty similar to PC industry. It has a lot of features. It's not casual games, it's match 3 stuff or farm or something. Sure, and I made maps for that, and the latest project was the most interesting. It was an old school style RPG in sci-fi setting. I did a lot of they did tons of work there. The whole tool set for level designers was made by my instructions, and it was really, really good and interesting project, but unfortunately it was cancelled by the publisher.
Oh no, that sucks.
Yeah. But the experience that I passed through there was really great. I've done a lot of stuff that I haven't done before, and I had a much more responsibility, and it was cool.
So now, you have a project that you're working on. You're doing a puzzle platformer called One-Eyed?
Yeah. It's the most recent. A friend of mine, she was studying at the game design school. I say the game dev school on game design faculty, and the diploma for them is to make a game, at least a playable prototype at least. And my friend was the one whose project was chosen to be made. Like they had a group of plenty of people, and each one come up with a idea of project, and then they pick up I think 6-7 projects that should be made, and the rest of the students they team up with those people whose projects were picked. My friend's project was picked, and I always wanted to work with Unreal Engine and that Blueprint stuff. I do a lot of scripting at work, but I do it by the tools and that are provided by programmers, like every element So I do not code. I just combine elements to script things. While I was interested to do the same without these instruments provided by programmers and blueprints and all that in real were amazing. I started. I was nothing. I remember the first few days. I was staring at the monitor, watching tutorials, trying to make something to work, and it wasn't working. And then the things go on, and it all started to work. And I haven't done level design stuff for that project. Most of things that I've done there were the blueprint stuff. So I was coding without coding. I made all gameplay mechanics, and saving system and all the rest, and it was really good. It was a different experience that I haven't tried before, and I can say I fell in love with Unreal Engine. It's really, really, really cool. It was made really, really properly. It's not like Unity. It feels like it's finished. It's good. It's a pleasure to work with it, I can say.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, it's obviously been so many hundreds of titles created with Unreal technology. And, you know, what Unity accomplished is impressive, but I constantly hear that it feels like it's something like it's a work in progress and it's a little kind of slapped together, whereas Unreal stuff is kind of a system that is, you know, mature. So that's interesting. I've never messed with either one. I was interested in Unity because of kind of the VR stuff. I was interested in getting into VR content creation a while back, and I looked at both. And at the time, Unreal didn't have quite as much. But yeah, I put that all aside and just got back into Quake mapping.
I can say I also have plans for making some VR stuff someday.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm every time I hear someone or read somebody saying, "Oh, VR is kind of a flop," and it's not, you know, but that's not how it works. It's I think it's one of those things because of the barrier to entry, you know, the high cost and everything to get into it. Those costs are going to come down over time, and more people will enjoy it, because once you show someone VR and they experience it for themselves, in general, people kind of get it, and it's not, you have to sample it. You can't just tell someone about it and then they go out and spend $400, you know, they have to experience it. So
yeah, absolutely. I can say I even have a document where I write down different VR mechanics that work or don't work with examples in which game it can be seen. So I collect ideas
you're doing your homework. You're studying and doing your homework for future titles. That's good. Well, let me ask you this one last question, Quake related. Do you have anything you're working on currently for Quake, or are you kind of taking a break right now?
Well, I have two maps that are unfinished, and I plan to finish them one day. The one is the map that I started for the first Xmas Jam. It's a 1024 map that Sepulchre teamed. I always wanted to make a map in a Sark medieval style. And I thought, what about if you get Sepulchre, shrink it, and throw in the sky? That's the map. It's pretty close to be finished. I really hope that I finish it in months or two. And I have a map that I've been working on since I came back. Oh, that's another little story. I was watching Does Dreams, and I saw Skaki's map for, I think, Retro Jam 3, and it impressed me so much that I thought I want to make something that cool. I know I can do it. So I started to work on my own metal runic map. It's gonna be huge. It's gonna be pretty old school turn some gameplay. It's massive, and I hope to finish it one day, because it's really cool. You can find some screenshots of it on Twitter or someone or the early ones saying I worked on it, and then all the GM stuff come out and then came the mentions and that map. I was pulled on pause, and I hope to finish it one day. Once I end up with a full release of it, and there's a lot more work needs to be done for it to be finished. But I really want this map to be released one day.
So do I. I want your maps to be released. Just make sure and back them up.
Yeah, that was the first map that I started to back up every time after I close the editor.
Good boy, good boy. We don't want to lose any more Pulsar maps.
This is RC. Thanks for listening to the Quakecast. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And I'm Dump Truck. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for Dump Truck _DS.